Welcome to Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Thomas Kidd, who is a professor of history at Baylor University and writes the Faith in History column for pathos.com. His last book was God of Liberty, A Religious History of the American Revolution. With Dr. Thomas Kidd, we go inside the pages of Patrick Henry, First Among Patriots, published by Basic Books. Dr. Kidd, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
What a fascinating character, Patrick Henry. What inspired you to begin the chronicling of his unique story?
Well, Patrick Henry is a figure that appears in two of my earlier books. I did a book on the Great Awakening of the 18th century, and then also a book called God of Liberty, A Religious History of the American Revolution. And Henry is, I think, among the major founders, is the most outspoken Christian. And that's of real interest to me because one of my main concerns as a historian is understanding the role that faith played in the American founding. And among the major founders, there's real diversity of personal beliefs. You have people like Thomas Jefferson or Ben Franklin, who we could call deists, all the way down to people like Patrick Henry, who are more traditional Christians. And so I'm interested in Henry as a serious Christian and also a very obviously militant patriot, who I think is certainly one of the key American leaders in the whole of the American Revolution.
Just for those who needed just a little brushing up on their history, of course, Patrick Henry made the great proclamation, "Give me liberty or give me death."
Well, that's right, and this is in 1775. Virginia, like many of the colonies, is beginning to consider whether they will take up arms to prepare for a defense against the British if war does come to pass. And the Virginia Convention, which is the leading patriot convention, is deliberating whether they should continue to try to negotiate with Britain and get concessions from them, or whether they should just accept the reality that the resistance is going to lead to war and revolution. And Henry, of course, has no patience for the discussion of continuing to try to negotiate. And so he says the time has come for us to accept the reality of war, and God will be our help and our protector if we take courage to defend our liberty. And so, of course, at the end of the speech, he raises his arms and he says, I know not what others may do, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Fascinating. He would have a different upbringing than most of those who were gathered at that particular moment in American history.
Well, he comes from a fairly humble background. He has almost no formal schooling at all. After the age of 10, he's entirely homeschooled by his parents. He never goes to college, but he reads very deeply with his father in the great books of the Western tradition, ancient classics and sources in Christianity. But he ends up preparing himself as a young man to pass the bar exam, and he studies law for a few months, and mm-hmm. then goes and takes the bar exam in Williamsburg, Virginia, and barely passes, but they think that he has a good enough knowledge of history, at least, that he'll do fine as a lawyer. So he is a remarkable man, I think, in his level of initiative, and I think it's really unfathomable today that you would have this kind of modest background and go to the heights of political and legal accomplishment that Henry did.
One of the things that you bring out in the book is that he, after even making that great statement at the beginning of this revolution, he would be one who would oppose the Constitution.
Yes, I think that this is one of the reasons why we know less about Henry's biography than we do about the other major founders, is because I think people today have a hard time understanding why Henry would be opposed to the Constitution, or why anyone would be opposed to the Constitution. But I think for Henry it was a pretty simple matter that he believed that the revolution in 1776 had been a revolution against centralized government power, against taxes by the British. And in 1787, James Madison and his Federalist friends are trying to create a new centralized government power that has, among other powers, the power to tax Americans. The Articles of Confederation government, which is our first constitution as Americans, does not have the power to tax. And it's not surprising. I mean, this is what the whole revolution is about. And so Patrick Henry says that this government is simply too powerful, too centralized, and he thought that it was a danger to American liberty. And so I think that even though I think most of us would fundamentally disagree with his vote on, against the Constitution, I think it's easy to understand and even sympathize with the concerns that Henry had, that he thought this government would eventually become a monster. And given the size of our government today and the struggles that we're having with figuring out ways to constrain its growth, I think his warnings look pretty forward-thinking.
We're talking with Dr. Thomas Kidd, the author of Patrick Henry, First Among Patriots. And we're talking about Patrick Henry in a very real way because his zeal for, or should I say, an understanding that there needed to be a transformation in how people are governed, given his time. And yet, what would stem out of the American experience, that the role of the Constitution, that was alarming for him because it did seem to squash so many of the liberties that he declared he would die for.
Well, that's right. And of course, like so many people among the anti-federalist opponents of the Constitution, Henry certainly wanted a Bill of Rights to be attached to the Constitution. And many people don't realize that the Bill of Rights was not attached to the Constitution originally. And James Madison and others did not believe that the Constitution needed to have a Bill of Rights. And so Henry believed that that was dangerous, that there needed to be a clear articulation of the rights upon which the national government could not intrude. But I think he also wanted more structural changes to the Constitution to weaken its power, its national power. And he had a strong belief that because of human nature, it was a very explicitly Christian belief that he had, that human nature is fundamentally flawed, and that people, if given power, will eventually abuse it. And so the best thing that you can do is have very diffuse state-based power, and that if you give the national government the unlimited right to tax and spend, that this will eventually get out of control.
Hmm. Tell us about his relationship with the others from Virginia.
Well, his closest ally in Virginia was always George Washington. And they had a long-time, very close friendship. They got to know each other very well during the Revolution, when Henry was the governor of Virginia for much of the Revolution. And, of course, Washington was the general over the Continental Army, and they had to work closely together in those capacities. And there was a time when, in 1777, that there was actually a conspiracy to try to have Washington removed as the general over the Continental Army. Mm. And the conspirators wrote to Henry, and they knew that Henry was the most popular politician in Virginia at the time, and that if they could get him on their side, that this would be devastating to Washington. So they sent him a letter and asked if he would join up with them and try to have Washington removed. And Henry, I think, much to his credit, and one of his most courageous acts as a politician, immediately packaged up the letter and sent it straight to Washington. He told Washington, "I'm embarrassed to think that these people would even think I could possibly be drawn into something like this. I won't go along with it, and I want you to know what's going on." And so Washington, even 15 years later, remembered this to friends, saying, "I always appreciated how Mr. Henry protected me in those days."
Talk to us about his faith. What is it that made up his character?
Well, Henry came from a serious Anglican or later on Episcopalian family in Virginia, and he also became involved as a boy. His mother would take him to the revival meetings of the Great Awakening, which in Virginia began really in the late 1740s.
Mm-hmm.
And Henry would go as a boy. His mother would take him to these meetings. And in one meeting, one church in particular was led by a Presbyterian pastor named Samuel Davies. And Henry later on would say that Samuel Davies was the greatest orator he ever heard. And I think that Davies and the other pastors that Henry sat under really helped him to develop his own faith as a Christian, which was lifelong and sincere. But I think Davies also helped him to develop his own political philosophy and especially rhetoric. And by all accounts, Henry was the most powerful orator of the whole American Revolution. And I think he learned that that powerful style that he had partly in those revival meetings. And even Henry's critics would say, oh, that Patrick Henry, he talks like he's a preacher or something. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something to that. I mean, and even when you look at the Liberty or Death speech, it is not a very long speech in text, but it's just shot through with references to God and to faith. But specifically, it at a number of points directly quotes the Bible, even though he doesn't stop and give the chapter and verse because he didn't need to for his audience. They knew the Bible when it was being quoted.
Mm-hmm.
But he had the Bible right at his disposal to help motivate people and understand with moral clarity the cause that they had before them.
He would be an anti-federalist and then be moved to become a federalist. And I think in our mindset, we probably should give the landscape of what that would mean and what other party essentially was out there, even before there really was parties. I mean, how we so clearly define them today.
Right, right. That's right. And the Federalists and Anti-Federalists are not anything like formal political parties. It's just an expression of, are you for or against the Constitution?
Mm-hmm.
But after the Constitution was ratified, Henry was always trying to step out of politics. He desperately wanted to just be with his family and live a private life. But in the early 1790s, not too long after the ratification, you start to have a split between George Washington and Alexander Hamilton on one hand, and then Thomas Jefferson and James Madison on the other. And Henry is always very pragmatic. He's not a rigid ideologue. And he also is so loyal to Washington that when Washington begins to be attacked as president by the supporters of Madison and Jefferson, Henry is always likely to align with Jefferson or with Washington, especially because this goes back to your early question about his relationship with the other founders. Henry and Jefferson in particular became bitter enemies after the Revolution was over. This goes back to an incident when Jefferson, as governor of Virginia in 1781, had faced an invasion by the British in early 1781, and Jefferson, several days before his term was up as governor, as the government was fleeing the British invasion, Jefferson resigned as governor and told the legislature that they needed to find someone else to be governor.
Oh, dear. So, we don't hear that story often, do we?
No, I don't know any good way to paint this. I think it was cowardly what Jefferson did, and most of the legislature thought so, too. Henry initiated an investigation into Jefferson's behavior as governor, and Jefferson never forgave him for it.
Mm.
So in the 1790s, when you have these party lines developing of Washington versus Jefferson and so forth, I think because of personal loyalty, it's inconceivable that Henry is going to do anything other than go with Washington.
Talk to us about his family and what he does for a living outside of trying to fashion this great government that it would become.
Well, he began as a farmer, like almost all the people of the time would have been, He doesn't much like farming. He tries to set up a couple of businesses, and they both fail. And so actually when he and Thomas Jefferson meet for the first time, Henry is in his early 20s, and he's working as a bartender.
Mm-hmm. So, gotta do what you gotta do.
He's already got a wife, and they're beginning to have children, and he's thinking, I've got to do something else here. Mm-hmm. So that's when he trains himself to pass the bar exam. Mm-hmm. And so he becomes a lawyer, and that's his primary profession outside of politics for his career. And he marries young. His first wife dies right before the liberty or death speech. So he must have been suffering during those days of the liberty or death speech and moving towards independence. More happily, he marries again in 1777. And between his two marriages, he ends up having 19 children.
Wow.
And so even as a aging man in the 1790s, he still has young children at home. Mm-hmm. And by all accounts, he is a very devoted father and maintains close relationships with many of his even adult children. And some of the very best letters that we have from Henry are written to his adult children. So I really admire Henry as a father, husband, committed family man.
A man of great character.
I think so. I think that there's a real integrity there across professional life, family life, business. One of the reasons I like writing about Henry is I do really admire him personally.
All right. As the great student of Patrick Henry, what would he say about the political landscape today?
Well, I think that if Henry was in a bad mood, he would tell us, I told you so. I think he would look at the titanic, mind-boggling scope and size of our government, both the domestic, entitlements, the military, just everywhere you look, just the mind-boggling scope of our government. And he would say, I told you that if you give the national government the opportunity to grow uncontrolled, and you give it the power to tax and spend, that ultimately it will become so large that you will struggle to know how ever to control its size. And so I think that we are living with some of the consequences of not heeding Henry's warnings. Now, I think to be careful, Henry would say, it's not the Constitution itself that's making this happen. It's the willingness of politicians to run amok with the powers afforded them by the Constitution. But as we consider, how to control debt and spending, I think Henry would tell us that just depending on the political goodwill and good behavior of our elected officials is likely not going to lead to the kind of change that we need. And so he might, it's hard to know, with such different political circumstances, but I suspect, among other things, he might suggest looking at constitutional amendments that would seriously, structurally limit the power of government to just continue to tax and spend.
Are you hoping that this greater awareness of Patrick Henry and his position, I mean, are you finding that it's almost a little scandalous just because, as you said in the beginning, it's difficult to put him into a box? I mean, and because of his stance of being so opposed to the Constitution at that founding, that a lot of other things that he brought forward have been lost.
Yeah, I think that's right. And at the beginning of my book, I contrast the liberty or death speech with his speech at the Virginia Ratifying Convention, in which he says that this is a decision that he tells the Ratifying Convention that angels are watching the decision that they are making, and that it was a decision for or against American liberty. And then I sort of reveal, this is a speech against the Constitution. And, mm-hmm. and so, the one is for the revolution, The second is against the Constitution, and I basically just raised the prospect: can we consider someone like Patrick Henry to be a first among patriots, as I call him in the subtitle, if he opposed the Constitution? And I think we so revere the Constitution today, and I think we're right to do that. But what do we do with someone who was so concerned about American liberty that he thought that even that centralization of power was a risk to our liberty? I think at a minimum, we can say that it is worth reflecting on his concerns about what the government could become under the Constitution, especially in these days as we struggle with these besetting problems of controlling the size of government. So I think that I do have to be delicate about this and not give the impression that I'm trying to run down the Constitution mm-hmm. or anything like that. I happen to disagree with Patrick Henry on the issue of whether we should have adopted the Constitution ultimately, but I think his cautions are well worth noting today.
Yeah, I think that's really the great value in Patrick Henry, First Among Patriots, the book that you've brought forward, Dr. Thomas Kidd, because it gives us a pause to say, did he see something? I mean, you could take a look at the seed of a tree and not necessarily say 100 years from now I can tell you exactly how the branches are going to go out, but I have an idea. And that's essentially his warning if we're not careful not to prune. I mean, or we should prune back and just be careful about what it can become.
Well, that's right. And I think that his warnings at the Virginia Ratifying Convention are really stunning at how accurate they seem about the situation that we are in today. Again, I mean, he warns about the growth of bureaucrats and the bureaucracy of the American government, that with the power to fund these kinds of things, that you'll have bureaucracy that will get into all kinds of areas that they had not originally contemplated, and that the government will just grow and feed on itself and feed on American tax money. And I think that his warnings are and all the anti-federalist warnings are serious. These people are patriots, and they're having a robust debate with the federalists about how much government power is too much. Now, I mean, I think they would all agree that you have to give a national government a minimum amount of power to do things that it needs to do. National defense, diplomacy, these sorts of things, but that you can very easily go too far and give it so much power that one day you will not be able to control it any longer.
Hmm. Fascinating. Well, any final thoughts?
Well, I think that we Americans so often don't know their history well at all, but I think with someone like Patrick Henry and the anti-federalists more generally, these are people that are difficult to understand, including by those who deeply appreciate American history and the history of the Constitution and want us to pay close attention to the original meaning, the original intent of the Constitution. Even for people like that today, it can be hard to understand and appreciate the anti-federalists. But I think we will be missing almost half of the opinion that was out there, the ratification debates and the vigorous debate that America had about the Constitution at the time, if we miss people like Henry. And when they had the vote in Virginia, it was very, very close. So they almost voted the Constitution down, led by Henry in Virginia. And who knows what would have happened if they had voted the Constitution down. But we have to realize that this is approaching 50% of the people who participated in the debates in places like Virginia, Massachusetts, New York, and these people were just as much patriots as James Madison and Alexander Hamilton were.
Well, and your writing is also just a wonder to read. It's just marvelous. And it just brings you into the story, even the setting of that great speech that he would offer at the close, where there would be almost a German opera-like type of nuance to it, where the storm is raging and there people are actually ducking and covering because there's something happening outside. I mean, there just seems to be this almost mystical experience happening as he's giving this great warning to the country.
Yeah, it's an amazing scene. I mean, it's really sort of frightening that it's Henry thundering against the Constitution and saying that this is a choice for or against American liberty, and warning that the angels were watching and with deep concern about the choice that was before him as he talked about these things. A terrible storm came up outside the hall, and thunder and lightning crashing, and the delegates went scurrying for cover, and Henry's first biographer said that the angels that he had summoned had brought the storm on, in a poetic way. And it's an amazing scene, and I think Henry's oratory, that he just had a knack for. Of course, he couldn't count on the storm, but he had a knack for just these brilliant, moving speeches. What is, I think, hard for us to understand, if you don't know much about Henry of the Anti-Federalists, is why this sort of last great brilliant speech would be the warning against the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Well, listener, take heed and read and pull out the sage advice or prophetic, potentially, vision that he might have and try to learn from that.
Yes.
Dr. Thomas Kidd, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
With Dr. Thomas Kidd, we've gone inside the pages of Patrick Henry, First Among Patriots. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to basicbooks.com, the website for its publisher. To hear and download this discussion along with many others, go to www.insidethepages.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.